Support for WPR comes from Tomorrow River Community Virtual School, delivering Waldorf-inspired live virtual lessons to grades 4K through 8th, open to all Wisconsin students. More is at trcvs.org.
Support for WPR comes from Doulaying the Doula, offering birth and postpartum training and certification programs for medical professionals and other interested humans. More information about training is at doulaworkshop.com.
We're talking about Wisconsin's same-sex marriage case. A federal appeals court judge was tough on Wisconsin's gay marriage ban during oral arguments in Chicago yesterday, suggesting that the ban was harmful to children of same-sex parents. His comments spoke directly to the lives of plaintiffs in the case, some of whom traveled to Chicago by bus to see their lawsuit through. Sean Johnson reports.
The ACLU's bus ride to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals is no express line. It begins the day in Madison and stops for press conferences in Milwaukee and Racine before slowing to a crawl in rush hour traffic outside of Chicago. Among those riding on the bus are Cammy Young and Karina Wills. They've been together for 13 years. They got married in Minnesota in December, and they welcomed their daughter Olivia to the world just 5 months ago. Olivia is also on the bus, asleep in her car seat. Cammy Young says this trip is historic. And even if Olivia won't remember it, she wants her to be a part of it.
Just the sheer fact that we would bring a five-month-old on a bus like this and a trip like this must tell you how much we really want to be here and how important it is for us to be here.
Cammy Young is considered Olivia's parent in Wisconsin. Karina Wills is not. Wills says the state would not even let her put her name on Olivia's birth certificate.
We wanted our daughter to have married parents, and so we got married. But even though we're married, we have a child, I'm not recognized as a legal parent, and that's really hurts.
The ACLU's lawsuit challenging Wisconsin's gay marriage ban is about more than just gay parents and their children. But the next morning during oral arguments, it's the children that Judge William Posner can't stop talking about. A lawsuit against Indiana's gay marriage ban is also before the court. Just a minute into those arguments, Posner interrupted to ask why the state had any interest in making it harder for gay parents to marry.
Wouldn't it be better for these adopted children if their same-sex parents were married?
Posner was just as aggressive with Wisconsin's deputy attorney general, pressing him over and over again to explain the state's reasoning for its gay marriage ban.
What's the rational basis for a legislative choice denying same-sex marriage? We know that these people want to get married. We think, or at least I think, it's good for the kids. So what's the offsetting harm?
After arguments, dozens of reporters from both states scrambled to get quotes to explain what just happened. Wisconsin Family Action's Jelaine Appling is there. Her group was the driving force behind Wisconsin's gay marriage ban.
I think we miss the fundamental reality that every child who was born in forever has both a mother and a father. That's a biological reality that we cannot deny.
Appling's attorney, Mike Dean, doesn't mention Judge Posner by name, but he says today's arguments miss the point.
This is why courts are criticized for legislating.
Karina Wills also takes her turn addressing a row of TV cameras. Wills says Judge Posner's comments struck a nerve.
Brought tears to my eyes. I think he hit the nail on the head.
Wills is standing next to Cammy Young and holding five-month-old daughter Olivia in her arms. She says families like theirs have the same ability to raise children in a loving home as anyone else.
For that to be the first words out of Judge Posner's mouth talking about children, it was amazing. It's really touching and lovely.
Wills and the other plaintiffs are soon on the bus back to Wisconsin. Whatever the court decides, there's a good chance of an appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court and maybe another road trip, this one to the nation's capital. From Chicago, Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
It's back to college time this week. A PBS NewsHour series is tackling issues related to higher education, and they spent a lot of time on efforts here in Wisconsin to tackle student loan debt. Nationwide, Americans owe over $1 trillion on their student loans, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and a growing percentage of students graduate with debt. Scott Ross joins us now. He's executive director of One Wisconsin Now, and he was featured in the PBS series on Rethinking College. Scott, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me today.
How big a problem is student loan debt for those affected and for the economy?
Well, I'm going to give you a couple statistics. You mentioned a little bit about the amounts. Right now, we have 40 million Americans who have $1.2 trillion of student loan debt in the United States. And to give you an idea just how vast it is, student loan debt is the second largest consumer debt in America. The only thing, the only more consumer debt we have is home ownership, mortgage debt. Student loan debt surpasses credit card debt. It surpasses auto debt. It's also the only personal debt that's actually gone up since the Great Recession. And the debt crisis affects all age demographics. For instance, 30% of the debt is held by people over the age of 50. And we actually had, in America last year, 158,000 Americans have their Social Security payments garnished because of student loan debt. So those are just some of the frightening numbers about how much debt there is out in the United States. Now, here in the state of Wisconsin, we've got over 900,000 people who have student loan debt. And what it's doing is, it is a direct drag on the economy, because we haven't had a crisis like this before. Student loan debt, and I'm going to use the phrase only in air quotes, student loan debt was only $200 billion in the year 2000. So you see how much it has exploded over the last 14 years.
Well, what's happened in those 14 years?
Well, a couple things. One, back in the 1990s and the early 2000s, we saw Wall Street and the big banks successfully lobby Congress to first privatize student loans and allow private markets to get involved as the originators of student loans. But secondly, we saw every single consumer protection afforded a commercial transaction taken away specifically from student loans. So, for instance, student loans, you know, they're not treated like any other loans in America. You can't refinance them like you can a mortgage or, say, a car loan. You can't lose them in bankruptcy. Student loans aren't even subject to state usury laws. And usury is actually something that's referenced in the Bible and not as a good thing. But student loans, you know, because, again, the way Wall Street was able to successfully strip away those consumer protections, usury laws for states don't apply to student loans. So that's one component of it. The second component is we've seen a deinvestment in higher education at both the state and federal levels. You know, Pell Grants, for instance, in, you know, 30 years ago used to cover 114% of the cost of a public university. Now they cover just 40% of tuition. We've seen here in the state of Wisconsin, for instance, back in 1990, the percentage of the state budget that went to higher education was about 9.5%. A generation later, that's down to less than 7.5%. And so we've seen both of those things: privatization, the taking away of consumer rights, and a deinvestment in higher education. And so now we have students, unlike, you know, say 30 years ago, you know, or 40 years ago, you know, my parents could go to college, work over the summer at a minimum wage job, and be able to have enough money to pay their rent, their tuition, and maybe pick up food now and again. Now you can't even, it's not even close to that. You could work a minimum wage job for 40 hours a week, 50 weeks out of the year, and not even be able to pay your tuition for a year at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
And you've got some ideas about how to respond to what you're describing. You have an idea. You want people to get organized to form a voting bloc. Tell us about how your idea can work.
Well, here's what we think. You know, again, when you're talking about just how many people are affected by this, and again, I want to point out, I don't want this to be, you know, I don't want to come off as some generational warrior, that's for sure. You know, I'm old. I mean, I'm like 45 years old, so I'm a solid Gen Xer. You know, but let me tell you that I think Gen X and the millennials have really been, you know, sold a bill of goods by the older generations when it comes to what's happened to higher education and our student loans. And so we think that we ought to take those 40 million student loan borrowers and organize them into a voting bloc. You know, we have a lot of discussion about issues like, say, Social Security and Medicare, which are two absolutely critical programs. There's 65 million people who get some form of Social Security in the United States, and there's 47 million people who get some sort of Medicare. And we have 40 million student loan borrowers. So I can't remember an election, a national election, say, that was decided by less than 40 million votes. So we know that both the federal level and at the state level in states all across the United States, that if we can organize this block into an active, consistent voting bloc, then we're going to be able to have some real changes made to higher education and to the student loan crisis. Because the problem is that this isn't just a moral issue. This is an economic issue. We did a comprehensive research plan at One Wisconsin Institute, which is our research and education arm, and what we found was if you have a student loan debt, you are twice as likely to rent or live with your parents or someone else than you are to own that piece of the American dream, a home of your own. The same kind of statistics bear out with new car purchasing. You know, young people used to be able to purchase new cars. Now they can't because they've got student loan debt. And we're seeing what used to be, say, a five-year payment after you got out of college become a 20- and 30-year debt sentence just to get a higher education. And we always just sort of ask this question. You know, higher education and technical college training is a key to getting into the middle class. How can we continue to be an economic superpower if the means to become middle class involve you being a participant in the second largest consumer debt in your country?
We're talking right now with Scott Ross, Executive Director of One Wisconsin Now. We're tackling issues of student loan debt just in time for back-to-school season, and you can join the conversation. Are you facing a college debt burden, or were you able to pay it all off, maybe avoid it in the first place? You can call and tell us your story. If you're a parent with kids heading to college, how are you juggling the costs, and does that possible debt load make you rethink college? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can email talk@wpr.org. We continue our conversation with Scott Ross, now Executive Director of One Wisconsin Now. We're talking about student loan debt, and he says the system needs to change, that too many people are stuck with crippling long-term debt, and that people facing that debt should get involved in the political action to make a change. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Would you join a political effort on this issue? Would you consider voting on this single issue to form a voting bloc? Tell us your story about paying for college, whether you're in debt, when you got out of it, or maybe you're worried about it as you begin the fall semester. 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. And Scott, I want to ask you, is this something that people would gather around? Usually when you talk about voters who rally around a particular issue, it's something like the size of government, it's gun control, it's reproductive rights. Does student loan carry that same kind of weight?
Well, I think that's the thing. I think this is something new to build, you know, because the crisis has only happened over the last, you know, like 8-10 years. And so I think that's what we are in the toddler stage of building this movement. But I think there's a lot of good that's going on. And one of the things I like about what you've asked people to do is to call in and share their stories, because I think that's part of it. You know, when we started talking about this issue about 3.5 years ago, you know, people were ashamed to tell their stories. They thought, you know, because again, it had always been that you go to college, you know, you take out some loans and then you pay them back. But people didn't realize, like, how out of control this situation had gotten. And let's be very clear about the student loan borrowers. They're not asking for a handout. They're not asking for a bailout. They're hardworking, and they've taken on the personal responsibility of financing their higher education. They just want to be treated fairly in a system that's treating them decidedly unfairly. And so I think part of this whole thing has been making sure that people feel like they can talk about debt that they've acquired in a system that's treating them unfairly. And we have a website that has just, you know, if you're really, you know, if you're in too good of a mood and you want to bring yourself down, you can go to trilliondollardebt.com and read some of the terrible stories from all over the country that we've assembled of people sharing their student loan stories. But after you read it, then it's time to get active. And we do want to build a movement based on student loan debt to ensure that these folks continue to participate in elections, right? I mean, if we have 40 million people who care about student loan debt, and no one's talking about them, talking about those issues, they're simply not going to participate in our elections anymore. And I think that would be a huge disservice. Also, we wouldn't be solving the problem, which is to do something about student loan debt. And I think the great news here in the state of Wisconsin is that we do have some real champions on the fight, both at the federal and at the state level. If you watched the PBS show last night, you saw Mark Pocan, you know, the representative from the 2nd Congressional District, and he has a great piece of legislation that would allow you to refinance your student loan like you can a mortgage or a car loan. Senator Tammy Baldwin joined with Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts, in authoring a Senate version of a student loan refinancing plan. But here at the state level, you know, there was a bill in the state legislature authored by Corey Mason and Dave Hansen to allow for the first time a state refinancing student loan authority.
I'm going to jump in here because I want to get to our full phone lines of people who want to share their stories. So let's go first to Jessica in Wind Lake. Hi, Jessica.
I'd just like to share my story. I'm 38 years old. I haven't been in college since 1997. I used to attend El Verno. I was told by my financial advisor, who was a nun, that no matter what, I had enough money for in financial aid to seek two bachelor's degrees, which I did. One day I was pulled out in December that my financial aid didn't come through. I needed $3,000 or I would lose all of my credits. I went from being a nanny to a stripper overnight to try to go to college, which didn't end up working out. I wasn't able to come up with that much money in such a short amount of time. Since then, I actually became a stay-at-home mom of three kids. I became married, and I have had a very hard time finding a job that pays with having three children at home. My husband's taxes have been garnished. I owed about $10,000 from the beginning. No matter how many years I've paid on my student loan, no matter how many times we've tried to pay them down, it just always seems to stay the same amount or go up. My husband's taxes were garnished 1 year because of this. He wasn't married to me when I was in college. I actually was beat up because of my student loans.
Wow, Jessica, thank you for calling and sharing your experience. And Jessica describing, you know, a runaway train there that she hasn't been able to get a handle on ever since. Is that the kind of story, Scott, that you hear?
Yeah, we absolutely hear stories like that. And, you know, thank you to her for sharing that with us. I know from my own experience, listen, I was a student loan debtor for 26 years. And I remember every single day I was racking up $13.40 in interest every single day. You know, I have a person in our office who is a hard-working individual who makes a good living, who's been paying student loans off for 6 years and owes $7,000 more than when she started. You know, that's the kind of stories that you hear that just break your heart and make you angry. And, you know, student loans, I mean, there's been a story that's been going around the last, like, 2 weeks about a family whose daughter had $100,000 in student loan debt, and she passed away. And because they co-signed it, they are on the hook for that, and it's going to be about $200,000 for them to pay it off, because student loans have no statute of limitations. And the crazy thing is, in American jurisprudence, there are four crimes that have no statute of limitations: kidnapping, murder, war crimes, and treason, and we essentially treat student loans the same way now.
I want to ask you about the new legislation that we heard before our caller, Jessica. You talked about a Wisconsin law and a Senate law being proposed to allow people with debt to refinance it, often like a mortgage is the comparison. Is that enough for you? If that were to pass, would this address the needs that you see?
I think it's part of the plan. You know, I think there's a whole lot that has to be done. You know, nobody's asking for all the debt to be wiped out, you know, because even if we did that, we'd still start racking up the debt because college costs have skyrocketed. The investment, you know, in higher education, state and federal levels has dwindled. You know, so we've got to come up with something that's just a little, you know, that our start has to be making things more fairly. And college student loans should be treated like other loans, and that means you should be able to take advantage of market rates and refinance your loans. You know, and that's the federal plan that Senator Baldwin and Representative Pocan and Representative Kind are also involved in, and that's also like the state student loan refinancing plan, which is called the Higher Ed Lower Debt Bill that Representative Mason and Senator Hansen co-authored last legislative session that actually had the support and co-authorship of all 54 Democrats in the state legislature, and you couldn't get one Republican to join on that. And that just made no sense to me, you know, because if anything, this was a conservative approach to it. It was a market-based approach to dealing with student loan debt, and because I guess the Democrats proposed it, the Republicans in charge wouldn't do anything about it. Haven't gotten any support from Governor Walker on this. You know, I guess the good news for people who care about student loan debt is that, you know, Mary Burke put that refinancing plan in her jobs package. She's the first gubernatorial candidate in American history to do that. And so, you know, people do have that option of, you know, of supporting a plan like that.
I want to go back to our phone lines. I'll get another one of these stories in. We've got Dave joining us next from Oshkosh. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. This is something that I can jump on board with right away. I am 26 years old and I got what I'll call fell victim to one of these online schools, private institutions that I was assured was accredited and the whole nine yards. The person I spoke to even compared it to the likes of Harvard because they've been around since 1894 or something like this. They were out of Utah. I won't use their name. But about a semester, I realized what was going on and that this was really just a scam operation. Some of the teachers, I swear, were just bots operating the classroom. And I left the school. Then I got stuck with all of the debt from it. I had taken out loans and such to pay for it. Well, I've since tried buying a house. I can't even get approved for a personal loan, much less a mortgage now, without a cosigner. And on top of that, the school is saying that I owe them money aside from what I owe the student loans, that they were two separate things. I don't understand that at all, how my student loans weren't paying the school I was going to and I was a student at.
And Dave, I'm sorry, we have to leave it there. We're just about out of time. And Scott, in our last 30 seconds, how would you propose joining people together, people like Dave, who have a story to tell for your new political effort?
Absolutely. Two things. One, go to studentloanvoter.com and sign up to be a student loan voter. And also join the national movement, which is higheredotnotdebt.com, and get information at both of those. You can sign up at the one site and get information at the other site.
All right, Scott, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
That was Scott Ross, executive director of One Wisconsin Now. He was featured this week in a PBS NewsHour series talking about student loan debt.